Welcome to Forum at 360, Middle East to Southeast. I'm Lisa Fu, your host. On this forum, we're going to talk to three high school exchange students from the Middle East about their experiences living in Southeast Alaska. Maha Abdulrazak, Haitham Ohana, and Abdullah Hussein are studying in America through an exchange program funded by the U.S. State Department. But before we talk to the students, we're going to talk with Rich Moniak of the group Juno People for Peace and Justice to learn more about the program and why the students are here. Welcome, Rich.
Thank you.
Maha, Haitham, and Mohana and Abdullah are part of the Kennedy Lugar Youth Exchange and Study Program, also known simply as the YES program. Can you explain more about what that program is?
Well, it's a program that Senator Kennedy and Lugar sponsored in 2002. In response to the terrorist attacks of 9/11. It's been in place now 12 years. The intent is to bring students from countries with significant Muslim populations to study in the United States, to exchange with our students things about their culture, their countries, their lives and values with our own, and with hopes of building bridges between the cultures and healing some of the problems that were became evident after September 11th.
How did the YES students start coming to Juneau and Southeast?
Well, there'd been YES students in Southeast Alaska and in Alaska in general through the AFS program. What's different with what JPPJ is doing is we're focused mostly or entirely on bringing YES students. AFS would have They have lots of different programs that they bring, and they'll kids from Europe and South America. We're focused on Middle East students from in the YES program. It's a big part of what fits, you know, our peace and justice mission. We got involved in it after bringing paying for two students to come down from Anchorage. They did presentations to the high schools. They did a community presentation. We took them to the legislature. A use of the organization that sponsors our kids liked what we did, and they asked us to start the program here.
Okay. The YES program isn't a typical exchange program. The students, when they're here, have certain roles and responsibilities. Can you explain the role that they play in the community?
Well, it's different than kids from France or Spain. These kids are coming from a part of the world we're at odds with it largely right now. They've got this ambassador role where if we're going to build these bridges, they have to pay a lot more attention to just being here for their own learning. They're trying to, they represent their culture, and they're trying to heal the fracture between the Muslim world and the West.
So explain more about what that means to be an ambassador.
Well, they represent their countries. They represent a culture that we don't understand. Mm-hmm. And they come here probably, you know, when these kids have arrived here, a lot of them have had difficulties with students perceiving them as terrorists or knowing terrorists. They get questions like that. They're trying to end the stereotypes that have done so much harm. Americans in Alaska, you know, there's not a large Muslim population anywhere in Alaska, where most of us are ignorant, and ignorance is where stereotypes come from. It's to break those down, and it's a small world now. You know, we can reach across with communications and transportation. We need to know the people that we're interacting with around the world, and that's what this is about.
So the organization that you're part of, Juno People for Peace and Justice, started bringing the YES students over in 2011, or started placing them in Juno and Southeast in 2011. In the past 3 years, how do you think the community has changed?
Well, I don't think there's any dramatic changes in the community. 3 years is not a lot for a program like this. We've had a total of 10 students here. Individuals might change a lot. One particular individual, Wayne Bundy, he told me that after 9/11, he basically had no use for anybody from the Muslim world. He just thought, they're all bad. They're all bad people. And in 2011, Wayne was very involved in youth soccer. We had a boy from Egypt, Omar, and a boy from Kuwait, Yaz, and they were both playing soccer. Yaz was staying with good friends of his, and as he got to know these kids, he realized that they're not what he thought. They have a lot of aspirations, just like kids he knew playing soccer in Juneau. He went on to host Omar for the second half of the year. Then last year, he hosted a Muslim Palestinian boy from Israel, and he may host again next year. And he's talked about moving to Oregon, and he says if he goes down there, he's going to want to host kids just from this program. So Wayne's one person, but he has friends, and he has, you know, runs into people in his business. And as people hear his story, you know, they may open their minds a little bit differently than they were before.
So this year there are three Yes students in Southeast.
Yes.
There's two in Juneau and one in Haines.
Right.
And what is the future of the program, or of bringing Yes students to Southeast?
Well, we want to continue to do it. If we don't continue, then and everything these kids do for us and do for them locally tends to be lost. We need a long program to help a generation experience this, not just one or two graduating classes. We'd like to expand the program a little bit. We'd like to see it go into Skagway and Sitka. Our reach in Juneau, and with Judith Meyer, who works with me on this program, we know we can reach within the program boundaries. Can take us to Sitka, Haines, and Skagway. We wouldn't mind seeing, you know, working with people we know in Ketchikan and Petersburg and Wrangell and getting the program started down there, too. As small as Southeast Alaska is, our kids do leave, and they take the stories they experience with these kids with them. And, again, it's planting seeds for the future.
Well, great. Thank you so much, Rich, for talking about the program.
Thank you.
Rich Monick is with Juneau People for Peace and Justice, the organization responsible for bringing these students to Southeast Alaska. We're going to meet one of our students right now in a video. This is Abdullah Hussein talking about his family.
I'm Abdullah Hussein, and I'm 16 years old. I'm from Bahrain in the Middle East. I live with my host family, Jerry Kress and Susan Auer, on West 12th Street, downtown Juneau. My relationship with my host family is actually really great. We're just so comfortable that we can even joke around and make fun of each other without even feeling like the awkwardness that would happen between strangers. My host mom laughs about everything. Like, she had this loud laugh that starts with one laugh and then silence, and then she keeps on laughing, and that is just so funny. I tell them about my day, my problems, if I'm facing anything. Just like the beginning of the year, I faced an issue with my chemistry lab. I did something wrong and I got a full zero in it. Then there was the teacher-parent conferences, and so my host dad, he just said he's gonna touch base about it and just discuss it with my chemistry teacher. Unfortunately, touching base turned into a little bit of raising his voice, and it felt awkward since he was at first yelling at my teacher, but it felt good because I felt like I was being treated like a part of his family, like I'm his son. I feel really lucky because I got my host parents. They're my second family.
Welcome, Abdullah, Maha, and Haitham.
Thank you.
Can you each introduce yourselves and tell us a little bit about the country that you're from? Abdullah, can we start with you?
My name is Abdullah Hussein. I'm 16 years old. I'm from Bahrain, from the Middle East. I go to Juneau Douglas High School. And Bahrain is actually really small compared to Juneau. It is just twice as big as Douglas Island.
Maha, do you want to go?
My name is Maha Abdulrazzaq. I'm 18 years old. I go to Thunder Mountain High School, and Yemen is in Middle East. And Yemen is the same size as Southeast Alaska, and it's 25 million.
25 million people?
Yeah, people lives there.
Hi everybody, and I'm Haitham Mohanna from the Gaza Strip, Palestine Gaza Strip. I came here as a Yes Exchange with the Yes Exchange program. I am here as an ambassador to my country. You know, the Gaza Strip and Palestine now is as occupied Israel, and I'm here to present my country and my culture and let you know more about myself and about my culture and traditions and change all the stereotypes that many people had. And I hope I will do a little bit at least of it. And yeah, thanks.
Well, it's great having you guys on the show, so thank you. Abdullah, we just watched a glimpse of your life with your host family, Jerry and Susan. And we actually have a photo of your father in Bahrain. And I was wondering if you could tell us a little bit about him.
Well, my father is a fisherman. He is from a big family with two brothers only. The rest are sisters. And so I've got four other siblings. And so he's the kind of guy who never shows emotions in public. And I don't think I've ever seen him cry in my life. And I remember in the airport when he was going to say goodbye, all he said was, "Make me proud and I'm going to see you next year." And then he left. And then my mom came and I asked her, "Why did he leave?" And she's like, "Oh, he's just going to cry. You've never seen him cry before, so he's not going to start now crying in front of you guys." And I don't know, it's just like a little bit weird since he just is this trick guy a little bit. He just wants the best for us, but sometimes I wonder if he should show a little bit emotions to us and stuff. He spends most of his time by his boat, working on his boat or some fishing techniques and his lines. And yeah, I guess that's pretty much it.
You recently spoke to your family, you said, right?
Yes, I got to speak to my family last night after 3 months. And so I remember when the video call started, my mom told me that my dad wanted to see me. So she called him, and then he came and sat next to her. And then he just stared at the screen for 3 minutes, maybe, or even five. And all he did then was look away. And my mom was like, "Here's your son. Aren't you going to talk or anything?" And he's like, "Oh, no, that's enough." And then he left. So, yeah, it is a little bit awkward. I mean, I don't think I spoke to him since I came here, except for once where we literally talked to each other, maybe once or twice, I remember. I remember it was in November when my host parents were gone. That was the only time. The rest of the time, he's just walking in the background or he's just staring at the screen or asking my sisters to ask me things over text and stuff.
Maha, how about your family?
I have a mom, dad, and a brother. My father, okay, he worked in a lot of jobs. He used to be first teacher, and then he used to be in a soldier. I mean, in the army, but not a soldier. He was helping them. And his last job was as accountant, and now he's retired. And my mom, she's a housewife. She didn't finish her studying. And my brother, he finished college before 2 years, and now he got a job, and he traveled away, far away from my family.
Great.
Yeah.
And Haitham, how about your family?
I have 3 sisters and 1 brother. Usually, like, families in back in the Middle East in the Middle East is a lot or more bigger than here for Europe or for Americans. So, as I said, I have 3 sisters and 1 brother. And I'm the 2nd oldest. My father is an engineer, and my mother is a dentist. And yeah, that's my family.
Yeah, so you bring up an interesting point about families in the Middle East maybe being bigger than families here. Of your host families now, do any of you live with siblings?
No.
Host siblings?
No.
I don't have any.
Sorry.
Okay. I used to live with two siblings, yeah.
Yeah.
So is that strange to be in a house not full of brothers and sisters?
No, really, because I just have only 1 brother.
Okay.
And I, so it's kind of fine.
Yep.
For me, it's a little bit more comfortable since I don't wake up on my mom yelling at my siblings or one of my brothers is fighting with the other or someone is just in trouble or anything. So it is a little bit weird sometimes, sitting, not having to do anything, like, or just not having to, not, like, you don't have anyone else to fight with. That's why sometimes I pick on the dog.
Oh, right, you live with two dogs.
Yeah. So, yeah, it is sometimes a little bit weird, but sometimes it's weird in a good way, sometimes it's weird in a bad way.
Okay. So on that topic, are there certain things that you miss about home?
Food.
Food.
I know I miss my family and friends, but not really, because I miss food very much. Okay, I like spicy food and hot food, and my host mom, she doesn't like spicy food. Yeah, she said her tongue can't take it, so I know. But sometimes I just go to the kitchen and just cook anything hot for me, yeah.
Okay, so you miss the food.
I miss the food very much. I know, I'm going in 3 months to eat the food.
I would miss the food too.
Yeah, I don't really miss the food that much because the, like, there's a quote in Arabic, we say it, it's we eat to live, not we live to eat. That
Maha might disagree with you.
I'm not saying it. I'm just saying it's a quote. Yeah, and I really don't care that much about food, but, you know, and this is about food, but I miss my family. I miss the land. I miss my country in general.
Yeah.
I sometimes miss my family, not all the time, and sometimes when I really miss them and I get to talk to them, they get on my nerves, and so I don't miss them for the next 2 to 3 months. So I guess, yeah, maybe probably fighting and arguing with my siblings and having, like, those silly little arguments about even where the spoon is or who left the spoon on the table. Even though it's cold in Juneau, I sometimes miss the feeling of air conditioners. It's just when you enter the house from that heat and you're all sweaty and stuff, you just feel like it's a fresh air, even though it's not fresh, but it's just, it just feels like your soul is going back into your body again.
Yeah.
Also, I miss my my sisters, little ones, and I'm second oldest. My sister is in college right now, and I have two sisters and one brother. They are kids, like around 12 or 10 years old, and I miss them, and I miss the noise that, or just it's very noisy at our house, and I miss the noise, yeah.
Yeah, I miss arguing with my brother, because we have only one laptop, and we have turns, so when I use it, then after like an hour, he comes, and he said, it's my turn, so I miss that. But here I can do whatever I want.
How often, you talked about missing your sisters, sometimes you miss arguing with your brother. How often do you keep in touch with your family, or how do you keep in touch with them?
I usually call them just a voice call every week. My sister, you can say every 2 weeks. My sister, she's in America in Pennsylvania. She also has an exchange program and now she's in college, Gettysburg. I usually talk to her maybe 2 weeks, around 2 weeks, every 2 weeks. And
so you just call them on the phone?
Yeah.
Okay.
I don't drive much Skype with them or video calls.
Okay. How about you, Mom?
I used to like to talk with them every week. But as I said before, my brother got a job and he traveled away from Yemen, and my parents doesn't know how to use the laptop and stuff, so maybe this is my third month I don't talk to them.
Okay.
Yeah.
When I first came here, I used to talk to them probably every 2 weeks. I was a little bit pressured by my mom, worrying about me all the time. And then I got busy, school, and then time difference. And so I would just say, I'm busy, I don't have time, or just... But I can, like, I usually keep in touch over texting and stuff with my sister. And so if there's something urgent, she would tell me, and if there's nothing else, I wouldn't worry about it. But sometimes, even if they only want to talk, they call me like 3 in the morning on a school day. And so I have to wake up and then turn my phone off. And then when I wake up, I go, you just woke me up.
When you do talk to your families or when you read the news, you must hear about what's going on at home in your home countries. Do you let the events that are happening in your home countries or what's happening to your friends and family, does that affect your daily lives here?
Well, for sure. Like, it's your... You were born there. You did, like, most of your life there, maybe 15 years. You lived there. So, it should, like, if something happened, it should affect at least something in your daily life. And, like, back in Gaza, I usually, like, keep contact with my, or the news and back in Gaza and Palestine with Facebook or with the news. Mm-hmm. So, like, every news I usually know about it. And, yeah, it does affect. It does.
And how do you deal with that?
You should, like, just get out from that mood. Try to get out, like, hang out or chill out so you can get out really from that mood. But if you did not, you're going to just get homesick or upset or, yeah, no.
Since I'm here, I had a couple things that were sad for me. Mm-hmm. First, my country had some issues like killing and bombing and stuff, but I think my country is now fine. Secondly, my one of my good friends died, and after a week, my aunt, my mom's sister, died. So that was hard, but we have to go on. Life will go on. Yeah.
So did you talk with your family a lot during that time, or?
It was so hard, but I did, yeah. We cried, but yeah.
Did you find it almost easier to be here so that you could?
Oh, in that moment, I was like, I wish if I was in Yemen, mm-hmm. like, I can be with them. Yeah. And we can share feeling and hug and cry, yeah.
I think this past week, where I heard there were, like, a few bombings in some villages back home since February 14th, is the anniversary of the Bahraini Revolution. So every year that time, there are some issues, political issues and stuff. So I heard there were like 3 bombings and stuff, but I didn't let it get to me a lot since I knew my family were fine and my friends were fine. All they said were a few people were injured, but no one was killed. Sometimes I wonder if I don't hear a lot about my dad. I wonder if something happened to him since he had this heart symptom, and they never found out what he has exactly. And so he just has those symptoms and where he just feels this thing rushing in his left shoulder, or he can't breathe, or his heart beats really fast. And he keeps on saying that he's so old and that he might die anytime. So that makes us even worry more. And then my youngest brother he gets seizures. They don't know why or how, and so we only worry about him when we don't see him, if he's in school or something. But I guess when they tell me, like, I knew my dad, I found out that my dad told my siblings that they should not tell me anything that is going on back home. Like, I remember my dad was admitted into the hospital, and then I asked about him, and they were like, oh, he's fine. And then I don't know how my aunt came out of nowhere, and she texted me, oh, did you know your dad was admitted in the hospital 2 weeks ago? And so I was like, no, I heard he was fine, he was traveling. And she was like, oh, no, he wasn't traveling, unless you call going into the hospital traveling. So it was a little bit scary. And I mean, as Haytham said, you just don't let it get to you, because sometimes when you let it get to you, you just feel homesick and then depressed and worried all the time. And sometimes that happens to me when I've got nothing to do. And so I just sit in bed wondering and stressing out for nothing.
Well, thank you for sharing that with us.
You're welcome.
We're going to watch another video. This one features Haytham and a newfound interest.
I'm Haytham Mohanna from the Gaza Strip. I'm a school photographer taking pictures of the events and sports of the Regionals 5 tournament. When I came here, I didn't think that I'm going to be a photographer or I'm going to take pictures, really. I really was inspired in photography when taking pictures of the Northern Light and the nature. The first time I came here, they said that I probably will see Northern Light, but I wasn't sure. I was so surprised when I see Northern Light. It's like, boom. It's totally different between taking pictures of sports and Northern Lights. If you want to take for the sports, it may take 1 millisecond of very, very short exposure. For example, when they're playing basketball, and they just run very fast, then score it. You're going to just see it normal if you just view it with your eyes. But if you really view it with the camera, it'll be totally different. Photography, just put this view as a memory. And you can keep this memory wherever you go and just gonna take it with you. I'm so happy that I'm here with the team, with the friends, and taking pictures of them.
Haitham, those shots of the Northern Lights were great.
Yeah,
can you talk about that first experience of seeing them? Where were you? What were you doing?
I was with my first host family, and actually I was doing the math homework. I was in my room, and my host father, he called me and called me over, and he said, come on and see the Northern Light. I didn't really care that much because I didn't, it's going to be that bright. But I just shut the book down, the math book, and just went outside to see the Northern Light. And when I saw it, it was like, boom, it was so bright. And I just, I grabbed the camera and the tripod and started taking pictures. And it was like really speechless. I couldn't describe it. It was so bright. First time I see really Northern Light. We didn't have Northern Light in Gaza or in Middle East or, like something in the sky, just green, red. This was so, so fabulous.
Have you guys seen them?
No, sorry. I'm sad. I want to see it.
I haven't seen them yet.
I remember when I was in 8th grade, we studied about it. Mm-hmm. And I was so excited. And I was like, oh, I will see it in my dream. But now I'm here, but I haven't. So I wish I will in 2 months.
But since being in Alaska, in Juneau and Haines, you've experienced many classic Alaskan experiences, one of them being snow. I know in your home countries, there is no snow. So can one of you explain what is the climate like, and what was that like seeing snow for the first time?
Okay. Like in Yemen, in summer, we get between 80 and 70. So it's cold. I'm sorry. This is in winter. I missed everything. In winter, we get between 80 and 70, and it's cold for us. And in summer, we get between 110 and 120. It's really hot. But yeah. I have never seen snow since I'm here. So I'm so excited.
So you consider between 70 and 80 cold?
For us.
Okay.
Yeah. because we used 200.
Right.
So 70 and 80, it's cold for us.
And is that the same in Bahrain and Gaza Strip?
Well, it's a little bit different, Gaza Strip. You know, it's a little bit colder maybe than Yemen.
Of course.
It's around, you can say, 70, 80.
Okay.
And when it's really hot, it's going to around 100. But we usually, use the air conditioners. Mm-hmm. It's way amazing with the air conditioner when it's really hot. Yeah, you feel good, cool.
It feels
and
good, yeah.
Yeah, but when I came here, I expected really to see snow. But, you know, when you just imagine, or when you just see it on the TV, on television, or your laptop, it's totally different when you really see it live and you touch it.
Yeah.
It was really nice experience when I saw snow. Yeah, it was different.
Yeah, I saw my first snow when I was in Haines. We went, both of us, to have small presentations there. So it was really good to see it there first. Uh-huh. And then we made the small snowman. It was so cute. It was my first snowman. I was so excited to see the snow there. Yeah.
But in Gaza Strip last winter, 3 months ago, in Gaza Strip, we really had like a cold weather. Mm-hmm. We had hails. Oh. And it really like rains hails or... Yeah, really drops really heavy hails, and my sister sent me some picture about my little sister, and they made like a snowman from hails. Oh. Just, you know? Yeah, it was so sweet, and when they just making it, and they all with the gloves and with the hats, and so yeah, seems funny.
So I know that you guys all have tried skiing at Eagle Crest here in Juneau. You went to the Capitol and you were introduced on the House floor. Abdullah, what's been your favorite Alaskan experience, do you think?
Downhill skiing.
Downhill skiing?
Sure. Yeah.
Why?
I don't know. It just gives you this feeling of freedom, as long as you don't injure yourself or anyone else, of course. Right? And even though the boots were really heavy, maybe too heavy for Maha,
of course.
And they like pressure your legs and feet and you feel some pain from them, but it's just like, it's amazing knowing that you just went all the way down that mountain on snow, on skis, and you came from a total different place, a total different weather, and then you were able to do that without breaking anything.
Skiing is the worst thing to have. I have tried it. I'm sorry.
Well, downhill skiing.
Downhill skiing. It was the worst. It was so scary. So I was excited. When I was home, I was like, I'm gonna do it. I will do it. I was so excited. Then when I went there and I put this ski on me, they were so heavy, and I started to slide by myself. I was, what's going on? Please stop. Please. It was so. I don't know. It was funny for them because they were laughing. Yeah, and the trainer was so patient. I don't know how he was patient, but he was really patient, and he tried to teach me. Then I told him, I gave up. I don't want to learn. I'm not coming back. Going. Yeah.
And then before coming to Alaska, you visited other parts of the state as well.
D.C., Washington, D.C.
Washington, D.C. And then have you traveled like since you've been here, or?
I went to Jordan. United States or other country?
Well, other parts of the states.
Oh, just Washington, D.C.
Okay.
Yeah.
So what did you think about Washington, D.C.?
Well, when we came, we had an orientation. It's called the after traveling orientation. In that orientation, we visited the White House, the Capitol building, and many other places. And, you know, I was like very excited, like, you know, when you came to U.S. and you just start seeing these places, the White House and many other amazing places. I was very excited that time because, you know, you can say, it's not the first time I traveled, but it's the first time that I traveled to different country that has different culture and tradition. You know, like, I traveled to Egypt. That's it. I didn't travel, for example, to Europe or to America, so I can see different culture or different, different people that speak different language even. So I was really excited about it.
Yeah. Abdul, do you remember when you first got to D.C.? What were your thoughts? Or
well, I think Bahrain was the first family, first country, to arrive that day, so it was a little bit hectic. We had a 20-something hours air flight, and so it was a little bit exhausting, but then it was fun, a little bit meeting all these different people from those different countries, but we didn't have all of our freedom since they gave us a fixed schedule and we had to follow it, like lunch, you've got an hour only for lunch, and we have this, we have that, so, and you can't do anything out of your group and your like mentor and stuff, and so, I don't know why, but I felt like everything was squished in Washington, D.C. I felt everything was low, but it was beautiful. It was so green, different, buildings, different statues and stuff. But it was good. I had a good time there.
Okay, so since coming to Alaska, to Juneau and Haines, have your thoughts on freedom and choice, has that changed? Do you think you have more freedoms or choices here than you do back in your home countries?
Oh yeah, absolutely, for sure. Because, well, like in Gaza, I like literally lost my hope coming here because I was like almost prevented to come here. So when I came, also about the freedom and the
choices,
it's totally also different. Just a simple example. And we can't have electronics devices back in our schools, and we don't have Wi-Fi. But here we have a Wi-Fi, and we can just easily access to any website, and you can listen to music. We can't listen to music in back, and this is just different, totally different tradition, I can say. Yeah.
It's like my freedom to be with guys. Like, I know in Yemen, I spend time with guys, but not like here. It's kind of like I feel them like, okay, we are equal, we're humans, so. And what freedoms? Okay. And like I can now, okay, in Yemen, if I want now in Juneau, I can go at night and walk whenever I want, anywhere. But in Yemen, it will be scary. And I remember one day I was downtown. I was here and it was at 11 at night and it was raining and we had to go, I think, to the theater to watch a movie. And it was so rainy and we were far away from the theater. We had to run. So we ran. It was so fun. I will never do that in Yemen. It would be so, I don't know, maybe I could say shame if I ran in front of the people.
Oh, okay.
Like in my age.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. That's really cool that you could do that here and feel like free and it was fun. Right. How about you, Abdullah?
I think I've got a little bit more freedom here. My dad is a little bit overprotective, so I can't do anything without letting him know. And if he says no, that's a huge big no, and you can never get a yes after that on the same subject. I mean, I can barely go out with my friends without being investigated. Who my friends are, who are their ancestors? I mean, he would ask me, do you know the name of their fathers? I'm like, yeah, the names of their families. How many siblings do they have? And then he would, and my dad knows a lot of people in my city, and so they would just call him, oh, we just saw your son with I don't know who, and blah, blah, blah. And then he would just call me, who are you with? I'm like, my friends. Who? Which one? What's his name? Describe him. And I guess, yeah, like in schools, you can't have electronics. You've got a strict uniform, timings. They get to beat you without like facing any issues. You get suspended easily. You can't do anything. I guess, yeah, I mean, here, maybe I'm out of my dad's like authority range, but I still have to text my host parents when I'm coming back, especially if I'm gonna be out later than 11:30. But sometimes I just don't tell them, and then they don't text me. And so when I get home, they're already asleep. And then in the morning, they're like, "Oh, he's alive!" And then we pretend that I slept on the porch or something.
Okay, we're gonna watch one last video, and this is of Maha talking about American high school.
My name is Maha Abdulrazak. I'm from Yemen. The name of my school is Aban High School, and it's a girls' high school. I'm super glad that I am here as an exchange and attending Thunder Mountain High School. In Yemen, we don't have the mix. Like, we have high school for guys and high school for girls. But here, I experienced to be with guys and spend time with them. Like, in Yemen, we can't hug, like, with guys and, like, shake hands. They, like, high-five and stuff. We don't do that in Yemen. Here, they are super, like, free. So this is kind of different. When I walk, like, people smile at me. And one day I was walking and there was a guy. He was like, you don't look from here. Where are you from? I was like, I'm an exchange student from Yemen. He was like, oh, that's really cool. And he was starting to talk to me. It was kind of weird for me. But then I was like, no, they're being nice to me. I think I learned to be more open-minded, like I was, but not that much.
I was like, no, just be aware from guys. Don't talk to them very much. But after being here, I think it's really good to be with them. And I think we are all equal. We are human. I think I'm so lucky being here and attending American High School.
Maha, besides going to school with boys, I know school's different in Yemen in other ways as well. One of them being, and you mentioned this before, your wardrobe. So how do you dress differently here than you would at home?
Like in Yemen, we have uniform. So my uniform, it's brown, like brown long-cut abaya and white scarf. But here you can wear whatever you want. And also the teacher, like, in Yemen, we have one class and the teachers change, but here we have to go to every class. And here it's really fun. I have to choose any subject I want. And I did, I already did. I choose all fun subjects except for English. It's really hard, but I have to take it. But in Yemen, I have mathematics, physics, and chemistry. They are so hard, and we have to take them. Yeah.
So school and education is a huge part of why you guys are here. Every day you're interacting with teachers and students in the classrooms, and you have this very important role, as Rich mentioned, as cultural ambassadors. How do you think you fulfill that role, or what does that mean to you?
Well, being an ambassador is not an easy thing to do. You should present your country and really present your country in really good way. Like, if I did something wrong, everybody is gonna say, each one in Gaza Strip or each one in Palestine do the same thing. And you should be literally, like, very careful and very open-minded so you can affect, or like, you shouldn't do anything wrong and be just aware of anything you do. And it's not an easy thing to do. It's not an easy thing to do.
One of my goals coming here is to try to change people's minds, what they think or what they used to think about Yemen or Middle East or Muslim people. And my goal is to be a good and a small ambassador for my country and represent my country in a good way. I know a lot of people think that all the Muslim or all the Yemenis are terrorists, but that's not right. And I know me and my friends, of course, we are against people who do that. Like, we are against killing, but they kill and they bring the Islam name. So I need to change that. This is not true. Yeah.
I mean, you always have to watch what you say, what you do, everything. And I think being an ambassador here is just like bringing like new perspectives in class, and like educate people about your culture, your traditions. Like yesterday, we had a seminar about a book reading in English, where this guy had three wives at a time, and his friend's son is gonna marry a girl who is 16 years old. And then the teacher was like, "How do you guys feel?" And I raised my hand. I was like, "Oh, that's a little bit normal. I mean, it is awkward, but it's a little bit normal for me since people are allowed to have up to four wives at a time. And before, back in the days, and I think maybe until today in Saudi Arabia, they like guys can marry girls who are maybe 14 years old and older." So after that, the discussion turned from the book to marriage in Saudi Arabia. And so I was like, "Oh God, what did I just do?" But it's a little bit, I mean, they all go, like, they get so interested in it because they've never heard or seen someone who knows about this. So it is like bringing new information, new, like, other cultures and traditions to class.
Do you all feel accepted in your classrooms by your peers?
Yeah, but before, please, I want to interrupt you. Before that, about the ambassador. And
sure,
about,
yeah.
Also, being an ambassador, you should also show not just the, you can say, the shining side. You should, like, for example, as Maha said, about the uniform or about the education. I think like wearing a uniform and having a strict education is a good side. I know, I mean, yeah, it's a good side. Like having freedom to choose, okay, I'm with that side, but having also a strict education is going to be stronger, right? So you want to always be or showing the bright side and the other side, and with your explanation, you're going to reflect a good point to the listener. That the thing that I want to just mention.
No, that's a good point.
Yeah.
Thanks.
So, yeah, do you all feel accepted in your classrooms by the other students in the school?
I think, yeah. We are very welcomed by our classmates and our principals. Because U.S. has many diversities in culture and tradition from, for example, Japan, many countries. So, and the kids, they are grown by many different diversity in culture and tradition. So I think they will accept it and they will not, refuse it or disagree.
Okay.
Yeah, my school students, they are so sweet and nice. And because, I'm kind of different because I'm wearing the scarf, so they like come to me and talk to me. What's that? And why you wear it and stuff. So I like talking to them. And they're sweet, yeah.
So what do you tell them? Can you explain your scarf?
When they ask me, like, what's that? Why are you wearing it? Says it. It's part of my religion that I have to cover my hair from guys, except for my dad, brother, uncles, and aunt, and husband. But I can't show it for girls. And they were like, once I had presentation at school here, and then I said that, and all the guys start to cover their face. I was like, that's fine, I'm not gonna show you my hair. But that was, it was kind of funny. Yeah, because they all, like, at the same time, they covered their face. It's like, no, that's not okay.
So you enjoy when people ask you questions?
Yeah, I like answering them.
Okay. How about you, Abdullah?
Yeah, in general, I think we are all accepted. I mean, Juno has this thing where people from the Coast Guard come here for period of time and then leave. So I think some people, they like grew into not getting close to people who are gonna leave a little bit. And so you can see it in some people, like they really wanna get to know you, but at the same time, they don't really wanna get attached and real close because you're leaving. And so sometimes when they just forget that I'm leaving, we just like laugh and stuff and we just have fun, and then all of a sudden they go, oh my God, when are you leaving? I'm like, oh, June. They're like, oh, that is so sad. But in general, I think we're all accepted by our teachers, schoolmates, classmates, and I guess everyone.
Okay, great. So actually right now is the question and answer portion where you and the audience can ask questions to these wonderful students. So if you do have a question, please walk up to the microphone. Okay, I'm going to start everyone off. I know that you've all given a few presentations in schools, in the communities. Haitham, I know since you've been in Juneau, you live in Haines, in Juneau, you've been working on this peacock project. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Recently, I'm making one for Thunder Mountain High School.
It's a peacock made out of origami paper, right?
Yeah, it's around 2,000 paper folding each paper, and it really takes a long time, but you can finish it maybe 2 months, something like this. You can see it's pretty, and I learned it from our school, from my teacher. Actually, he's a math teacher. He likes to do the origami thing. It's an origami work from Japan. And he really was inspired in that, and he started teaching it in our school, and I learned it, and I was really inspired, and I started making it. It's not just a peacock. There's many things I can show you later, but many things you can do, any shape you want. It's very cool, but it takes a long time. Yeah.
So when you give these presentations, what is your goal when you're doing that?
Change the stereotype. You can say that maybe the first the first thing that changed the stereotype.
So, okay, so what are the stereotypes that you find?
There are many stereotypes, like you can say, first of all, that Arab is a red terrorist. Arab is not educated. Arab is, you can, like, there's, I really literally heard many things about it, and I want to really change these stereotypes. Yeah, this is the stereotypes, to let the people, like, know more about my country, about the Middle East, about our culture and tradition. And because really many people like know more about other culture and traditions. And I'm from the people that really want to know more about American. Even I'm just here for a year, but I'm sure that I didn't get everything about American. Yeah, this fact. But yeah, let the people know more about it and just change the stereotype. Yeah, I mean, this is the important things or the important ideas that.
Just to exchange my life with them and my culture and tell them about some little bit about my country. Yeah.
Yeah, I think the biggest goal is maybe educate them about our countries and cultures, because my host parents, when they picked me, they didn't even know where Bahrain is, so they had to Google it. And then they were like, where it is? Where is it? Where is it? And then they saw this little dot on the map, and so they figured that it's a really small country. And most people here think maybe probably most Arabs are either terrorists, maybe they don't have all the technology. They keep on asking me, do you have cars? Do you travel on camels? So yeah, I mean, the only incident that I faced with the stereotype about Arab being terrorists is maybe from one student, I guess, or maybe another student from cross country who was joking about it, but it was a little bit like uncomfortable, since it's not a thing that you should like joke about it. But I mean, most people just like learn that it might not be totally true.
I think we have a question.
I was just wondering if there was any American customs that you guys thought were strange or funny.
I think Halloween. I'm sorry, I forget the word.
Halloween.
Yeah, Halloween. It was, okay, it was strange because some of them wear scary stuff and do scary makeup, so it was kind of strange. But I did same. I was, I was Dead Frog. So I wore, yeah, it was Dead Frog. I wear like black and white makeup and green costumes. So it was cool. And they went trick and treating, so it was cool. Yeah. What about you?
Well, I was in hands when the Halloween happened, and it was totally different. Like, everybody wear a new costume and scary dead people and yeah, and but the most thing I like trick and treat have some chocolate and yeah, but you know, this is a good question because it's different culture and tradition also, you know. Even the customs or the clothes different, that means there's different culture and tradition, and each one has different attitude and different opinion of wearing clothes and costumes. Yeah.
I guess having this much dogs. Like, back home, they used to have a lot of dogs, but then they like started not to have dogs, and they'd only have dogs for security and stuff, and they would not allow them to come into the house. And so when I came here, my husband's have two dogs, and then I wasn't really comfortable around them, those two dogs, but now they're just like my two best friends. And then I remember I was in the house for maybe 30 minutes, and then this dog from our neighbor across the street just somehow managed to get out of their front yard and then came all the way to our front door. And so we were like, oh, it's Susie's dog. And then we returned the dog to their house. And so then I can see people like walking their dogs and everything. And it was a little bit funny seeing like probably every single household has one or two dogs. So it was like, okay.
Also, they consider the pets as a part or as a member of their families, and we don't do that. Though we have, like, we used to have, I think 6 cats in our house. We never ever consider them as a member, but we feed them and we play with them, but we don't really give them a name or, yeah,
just call them cat.
Yeah.
Come on, cat.
Yeah, there's a different part also.
I mean, those two, Gustavus and Jose, are just so cute. And as I mentioned earlier, maybe what I like miss about having siblings is the noise that I wake up on. Except this time, it's not my mom yelling at someone else. It's the dogs barking when no one's at home and I'm sleeping downstairs because someone's just passing by. They just keep barking and barking and barking and barking. And one of them is Nightblind, so he just stands in the middle of the dark kitchen and starts barking.
Unfortunately, that's all the time we have today for this forum at 360, Middle East to Southeast. Audience, please join me in thanking our guests today.
Thank you.
Thank you, Rich Maniak, Abdullah Hussein, Maha Abdulrazak, and Haitha Mohana. And thank you, audience, for joining us on Forum at 360.